Time now for NHL Hour with Bill Clement and Commissioner Gary Bettman. NHL Home Ice, XM204.
What a great day to be alive.
Because it's Valentine's Day?
Absolutely.
I see you brought your wife today. It's delightful to meet her and see her.
My wife and her two sisters, and believe me, at Tavern on the Green, I truly was a thorn in a bed of roses.
I bet you were. Did you pick up the tab at least?
No, that's an insult that you would even ask that
question.
No,
actually, I was thinking in the context of this show for the hour probably didn't pay for lunch.
I know what you get paid didn't pay for lunch. To be honest with you, what I get paid did pay for lunch. So I'm
delighted. By the way, I'm delighted to hear that.
Thank you. It's a break-even kind of day.
That's okay.
We're live from the NHL store powered by Reebok. And you're listening to us either on NHL Home Ice XM 204 or NHL.com. If you'd like to be part of the show, we'd love to have you. Gary Bettman will answer your questions, your emails. Phone number is 877-NHL on XM. That's 877-645-6696. The email address, NHLHour@NHL.com. How's your week been in general?
Quiet? By the time I can't even remember what I did 2 hours ago. I don't know if it's the pace of the week or I'm just getting old and senile, and it's, although people probably think I've been senile for years. But the fact is, it's been a busy week, no complaints. Although, you know, it's interesting. Last week, we were talking about and looking forward to Hockey Day in Canada.
Yeah, you bet.
This week, we're looking forward to Hockey Weekend across America, which was developed and it is an initiative undertaken by USA Hockey. So tomorrow, you know, since we're celebrating holidays.
It's a three-day deal, right?
Right. Well, it's more than, yeah. It's wear your favorite hockey jersey to school day. So all kids are encouraged to wear their favorite hockey jersey to school, unless, of course, you go to a school that has a uniform, in which case we don't want you to get detention. Saturday is Bring a Friend to the Rink Day. Sunday is Celebrate Local Hockey Heroes Day. And a number of our clubs have local initiatives, so go to NHL.com and the club websites, and you can see what they're doing. But there are a ton of Hockey Weekend Across America initiatives. And, for example, the Red Wings are serving as hosts for Hockey in the Hood, and that's a tournament that involves the NHL Diversity Program. And teams from Detroit, Boston, Buffalo, Chicago, Columbus, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Washington, D.C., and Alaska.
Alaska's in.
Alaska.
Oh, cool.
Scott Gomez must have had something to do with that.
Ty Conklin.
Exactly.
Dubinsky.
The championship game of the tournament will actually be played at the Joe Louis Arena on Sunday night. You know, it's interesting that there have been a number of USA Hockey programs that have developed over the last few years, not the least of which is the U.S. National Team Development Program in Ann Arbor, Michigan. More and more U.S.-born hockey players being claimed as high picks in the entry draft. What was it, 10 out of the 30 in the first round last year were U.S.-born? And girls and women's programs are doing fabulously well. It's all good stuff, so yeah. USA Hockey does a great job.
Hockey interest can't be any higher. I can't believe that it's ever been any higher than it is now. I'm looking at, you look at the schedule in the East, there are seven teams above and below the bubble, but congested in a six-point spread. And in the West, you've got six teams above and below, three above and three below with a six-point spread. I guess, after all, I mean, we talked about this 6 weeks ago. There is something to be said for that that point when you lose in overtime or the shootout. I get that now.
Well, it's a function of how the standings work and the ability to come back and stay in the mix. And what's interesting, even the couple of teams that are out of it seem to be making a move, and I don't think anybody's out of it yet.
Right.
But the point in overtime or the shootout was really a function of how the game gets played in the third period. There was a lot of concern at the competition committee. Coley Campbell was a proponent of the point, as were some of the players who were on the committee, because the notion was if it was all or nothing, 2-0, you get 2 points, you know, or no points, no matter how you won, or if it was 3 points for a regulation win, you know, with a 1 or 2 goal lead with 10 minutes to go,
you're going to shut it down. Yeah, right.
You know, it's kind of like why we have the icing rule, because if we didn't have the icing rule, once you got up by a goal or two, the puck would just go careening down the ice time after time. So it's an attempt to make sure that our great game stays as entertaining as possible.
Fantastic. There's hockey interest across North America. And the hockey world world's eyes were turned to the Florida Panthers and Richard Zednik on the weekend. It was really a scary incident when his carotid artery was partially severed. And the great news is that he's going to be released from a Buffalo hospital within 48 to 72 hours. What was your a personal reaction now from when you saw it?
Actually, now I remember why I was drawing a blank on the early part of this week, because it started in pretty traumatic fashion on Sunday night. Obviously, we were grateful that the medical people, the trainers in Buffalo, did such an outstanding job of dealing with what could have been an absolute crisis on the ice. And Richard deserves a great deal of credit for having, you know, the presence, the awareness to skate to the bench and not go out down on the ice, because I think time was of the essence. Our medical people, our trainers are terrific, mm-hmm. and part of what they're trained to do is deal with emergencies. I spoke to Richard and his wife, Jessica, yesterday. He sounded in terrific spirits. My understanding is, at least as of yesterday, is he was going home on Saturday, mm-hmm. and he was going to need a 6 to 8 weeks to heal up, but he was feeling good.
What's the NHL policy on having doctors at games? Where do they have to be?
They have to be within 50 feet of the benches or within four rows behind the bench, but they have to have immediate access to the bench. It's not like they have to go around through the stands. They have to be able to get down immediately. You know, we had an incident with Uri Fischer a few years ago, whose heart stopped beating on the bench during a game, and the doctors were able to revive him. Our policy is there has to be, you know, medical doctors there and with immediate access mm-hmm. to whatever happens on the ice.
I want to ask you about whether or not that game was in jeopardy of being completed or canceled. First of all, again, the phone number, 877-NHL on XM. That's 877-645-6696. The email address, nhlhour@nhl.com. Gary Bettman, the commissioner of the league, is getting ready to answer your questions via phone and email. What is your role in the loop, and were you in the loop as it happened? There was a shot on television of Coley Campbell standing there. Darcy Regier was on a phone. They were both talking to the ref. What was going on at your end at that point?
I had been in phone contact with Coley from the rink and with Mike Murphy at the Situation Room. We stopped calling it a war room in Toronto. and the first thing that we worry about is the condition of the player. And then we try to get a sense of how the other players are doing. And in each of these cases, in the Detroit case, the Uri Fischer case, we actually stopped the game because I think everybody was sufficiently traumatized. What we did was we tried to get a sense from both the general managers and coaches of both teams who were trying to get a sense from the players as to how everybody was doing. And once we knew that Richard Zednik's condition had stabilized and he wasn't in any immediate jeopardy, the decision was to let the game continue, which I actually think in terms of the fans there probably made it a less traumatic event. In other words, if they saw this and then we canceled the game, I think for the 18,000 people there, it might have been even more traumatic than having seen what they saw. But, you know, the first priority is making sure that the player in question is okay. Then we want to have a sense of how the players are doing. And then depending on, you know, if it was a minute into the game, it might dictate a different result than if there was 5 minutes to go.
I was watching the Buffalo feed. Rick Jenneret and Harry Neal did such a professional job of staying on top of what was happening and being true professionals. And kudos to the fans in Buffalo. They stood up when it was announced that Richard Zednik was at least stabilized, and they gave him a standing ovation. It was a fantastic gesture by everybody in the building.
Well, the announcers in Buffalo do a great job, and Buffalo is a terrific organization, and we know how passionate and what great hockey fans the fans in Buffalo are. So, you know, everybody handled themselves extremely well under the most dire circumstances.
I think we're almost ready to get started here, aren't we, Gary? The training wheels have been off for a few weeks, so we're just going to dive in. Training, you never did wear those training wheels in this show, did you? You just came in and became a host.
I don't understand. How do you have training wheels when you're doing a live show?
Learning. Well, yeah, I see your point.
I mean,
there is no net, is there?
I hope our interplay has gotten a little smoother, you know, because...
mine's been fine.
Yours
Gary.
Has always been fine. I am the rank amateur at doing this, and I'm glad this is a profession I never had aspirations for as a kid. I give you and everybody who does this professionally the utmost credit. So let's talk to Rich from Long Island. Rich, you're on XM204 with Bill and Gary.
Hi, Mr. Bettman. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I had a question for you about some of the rule changes that you initiated a few years ago in the league. And for the most part, I'm real happy with all of them. I think they improved the game. But on the delayed offsides penalty, the delayed offsides rule, you guys kind of only went halfway with it. Instead of allowing old men to leave the zone before they could re-enter, now you allow the puck to go back in. But it used to be the tag-up rule. And when I heard you were bringing back the late offsides, I thought that's the way the league was going to go with it. But like I said, you only went halfway with it. I don't understand why. I thought the game was much more exciting when players could tag up and enter the zone before all the men had exited and allowed...
No, it's never been like that, though.
Yeah, no, actually, we have the tag-up rule.
But everybody has to exit the zone.
Absolutely right.
And they always...
No, I do. Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember, I mean, I think 94 was the last year of it. I thought a player with the puck was allowed to enter the zone before all the men had...
No.
Never.
Never. No, in fact, the way we play it now is intended to keep play going instead of having a whistle where if you're offsides and you can't cure it, we have to blow a whistle, which was the old rule. By going up to the tag-up rule, the puck can go in, and as long as everybody touches up and gets out of the zone, they can go back in. Fewer whistles, better flow. But the other thing to keep in mind, and people frequently say to me, you know, I love the rule changes. I think you use the words "for the most part." But the fact of the matter is, what we did was a package of rule changes, and it's tough to pick out one or two things that we changed and say, well, I don't like that, and I like all the others. It was really an entire package that we put together. Harris in Los Angeles, you're on XM204 with Bill and Gary.
Gentlemen, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for taking my call. Kind of scheduling question. You know, being a LA Kings fan since 1984 and a season ticket holder, you know, spending a lot of money, and when Wayne Gretzky was, you know, with Edmonton and then on the West Coast, we were lucky to get all the attention of the media and all the marketing of the NHL, and it was a great time. But now we see the Sidney Crosby, the Kovalchuks, all on the East Coast, and we don't see the East Coast teams that often on the West Coast. And the second part of that question would be, I know the games are on NBC right now and on Versus, but on the West Coast, there's a huge gap of national coverage of the games that are on the East Coast, unless you have Dish Network, of course. And I don't see NHL advertising on regular channels like CBS, ABC, and Fox about commercials to promote the NHL like we used to see back in the 80s.
Let me respond to those questions. We did change the schedule. We voted to do it for next season, so the number of interconference games is almost doubling from 10 to 18, and you'll see every Eastern team play your team at least once, and at least once every other year that team will be in your building, and some teams you'll have a home and home against every year. NBC and Versus, there are some NBC, they both do a great job. Versus isn't carried on basic cable by all of the cable operators in the greater Los Angeles area. And if enough people call, I think it's Cox Cable, and tell them you want your Versus and you want your NHL, that may make a real difference. Virtually all of our games are on the Center Ice package, which you can get from your cable or satellite providers. And with respect to the advertising, you probably see a lot of advertising for on CBS, NBC, and Fox for the NFL because that's where they are. Traditionally, sports leagues don't advertise on the networks, don't have advertising spots, don't have promotion on the networks that they're not on. Because in some cases, those networks won't even take it if they're not carrying you. But we believe that we're probably advertising and promoting more than we ever have because we think it's important to continue to get out the messages to our fans. If you have any questions as to how to get our games, how they're being scheduled, what network they're on, please go to NHL.com. All that information is there for you.
Just a quick reminder for our callers, our board is completely lit up. If you can keep your questions concise, we're going to be able to get you all taken care of today.
Great. Alan in Vancouver, you're with Bill and Gary on XM204.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
It's our pleasure. Thank you for calling.
Well, thanks. I was wondering, I live in the Northwest, and I was wondering if the NHL is ever going to make it out here to, like, Portland, Oregon, or Seattle, Washington.
That's a great question, and, you know, those I know are both terrific hockey markets. The old Portland Buckaroos and the Seattle Totems.
Yeah.
You know, there's a terrific history there. At the present time, and I know people are probably tired of hearing me say this in certain places, we're not planning on any relocations. We don't have any formal plans to expand. If, however, we either find ourselves with a need to relocate a franchise or if we ultimately decide to engage in a formal expansion process, we will consider all of the possible locations that have expressed interest in our game over the years. That includes cities like Portland and Seattle. It includes cities in Canada. Includes places in the U.S. other than the Pacific Northwest, like Kansas City and Las Vegas. So nobody's been ruled in or out, and we do know, and we do get regularly expressions of interest from Seattle and Portland.
Are there buildings in Portland and Seattle that would be ready to go for an NHL team?
In Portland, they have the Rose Garden. And in Seattle, I believe, I forget what the name of the current arena, it used to be the Key Arena, I don't know if they still call it that, where the Sonics play. I actually think they either changed the sight lines during the last renovation or didn't put in ice altogether, so they would need a new building in order, I believe, to handle an NHL team. That's all off the top of my head because, as I said, it's not something we've formally looked into because we haven't had any reason to do that. Craig in New York, you're on XM204 with Bill and Gary.
All right, gentlemen, I have the honor of speaking with you, and now since I've been on hold a little bit long, you get to come Valentine's Day shopping with my wife. Anyway, my main concern was, as a season ticket holder at an arena here in the city for the Rangers, my concern is that we talk about, like, state-of-the-art and having everything out there for the fans. My concern is for us, the fans at the games, when something happens, an incident occurs, we are in the dark until we get home or unless we have a transistor radio hooked up to our ear. Is there any plan or anything at all that may happen to help us in the near future?
Yeah, actually, we think that the in-arena experience should be the superior experience. And as a result, we have been more proactive in terms of having PA announcers announce things. There's greater use of video. You know, if you think back 25, 30 years ago, most arenas didn't even have video boards. We now have the referees mic'd so that they can make announcements. And the last element, which I think will tie this all together, is we are probably three-quarters of the way through a project which will enable the people in the Situation Room in Toronto, principally Mike Murphy and Coley Campbell, who are doing video replays, to actually speak to the officials. So if there's something going on that's a particular problem, we can make sure that there's an accurate exchange of information. The problem is sometimes, you know, you don't want to make an announcement when not everybody knows everything that's going on, and sometimes the people on the ice don't know everything that's going on, but we want to do everything possible to make sure that what is, we think, the best experience in professional sports in person is even better, because certainly you shouldn't be at a disadvantage. And with all the technology that's available, there's no reason that you shouldn't ultimately be able to see what people see at home on television. And when I say ultimately, like, for example, we don't like the arenas to show video replays of a goal that's being reviewed until a decision's been made.
But
we
they
don't,
do.
Well, no, they're not
Some.
Supposed to.
Some
they're
do.
Not supposed to, because we don't want the atmospherics to influence the call. We want to try and keep this as pure as possible. Bill in Florida, you're with Bill and Gary, XM204.
Good afternoon, Commissioner. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, doing pretty good. Feeling a lot better after the All-Star weekend. But anyway, in regards to Zegnik and your linesman that got injured the day before with the skate to the face.
Yep.
I was watching the NHL Network, and they were commenting about making visors mandatory. Now, I don't know if that would make a difference with Zegnik, But with the linesman, that might have made a difference. And I was just wondering what your position was on that.
Our position is, my position has been that I would like to see the players wearing visors. Our officials in their last collective bargaining agreement have now all agreed to wear helmets and visors. So they all have visors now, and that's a change. And with respect to the players, that's something that the Players Association on behalf of the players would have to agree to. And the union's position, at least to this point, has been it should be a matter of individual player choice. In this case, I don't think a visor, the Zednik case, I don't think the visor would have made a difference. Neck guards might or might not have, and that's something that I think falls into the same category as visors. And I believe Paul Kelly, the new executive director of the Players Association, was actually quoted, I think, in a statement in the last few days saying, even with respect to the issue of neck guards, this too should be a matter of individual player choice. I will tell you that when my son played high school hockey, I remember as a freshman, he came up after a practice that I was watching and said to me, listen, we don't have to, the coach says we don't have to wear neck guards, so I'm going to take mine off. And I said, no, you have to wear a neck guard. And he said, no, coach said we don't. And I said, that's fine, you don't, you're right, but you're not playing. And so when you have that type of control, it's easy to say this is the way it's going to be. But at the end of the day, these are things that we have to resolve with the union. And the union's position is, both as to neck guards and to visors, it has to be individual player choice.
But a serious cut to the neck falls into the category of freak accident.
Yeah, by the way, that's true. Although, you know, freak accidents happen.
Oh, of course they do.
But by the way, I'm more focused on visors because there are a lot. The doctors, I think, have told us that the number of facial injuries would be reduced by some double-digit number. I'm not prepared to say 40% because that might be an exaggeration or hysterical, but somewhere between 20 and 40% facial injuries would be reduced with visors. Doesn't mean it would prevent all of them.
Right.
And more importantly, eyes don't heal as well as the rest mm-hmm. of your body, and you lose an eye, you lose your career. So it's something that I think we need to stay focused on and at least continue to have a dialogue with the Players Association about.
We're going to ask all of the callers to stay on hold. We're going to step out, and in a few minutes we hope to be chatting with Ted Leonsis, who's the majority owner of the Washington Capitals. When we come back, Gary will take your calls, answer your emails, all on the NHL Hour on NHL Home Ice, XM 204 and NHL.com.
So the question is, do they play Bare Naked Ladies every week because they know I like them?
Sure.
Or because Bare Naked Ladies are huge hockey fans?
I would say the former.
Oh, yeah.
I go for door number one. You're the commish.
You like the sucking up factor? You know, that's okay.
Well, it's up to them. I mean, it's in the eye of the, never mind, the beholder, I guess. Let's get to a caller.
Sounds great. John in New Jersey, you're with Bill and Gary on XM 204.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Our pleasure. How you doing? You been to The Rock yet?
I have been to The Rock, only for a concert, because I'm not a big Devils fan. So.
Ooh, sorry.
Well, actually a Rangers fan.
Ah, okay.
The
Rangers play there on occasion.
Yeah, they do, but I don't like going into the opposition's building too often.
It's a nice building, as you know.
Yeah, it is a nice building, though. I'll give them that. Real quick, I'm only 21 years old, but I've been watching the Rangers since I've been 8 years old. I was actually lucky enough to be at Game 7 when they won. But quick question. I realize this wouldn't be an issue if the Rangers took care of business early in the season, but from what I can recall, every year it just seems to be that, especially in our own division, that we're always the team that is trailing in games in hand. Like, we're always the team with the most games played. I'm just wondering, out of the scheduling aspect, is that something anyone looks at? I mean, it always seems like we, the Flyers, for instance, I think they had 4 games in hand on us the other day, and we never seem to have games in hand at anyone in the end of the season. I just didn't think that was too fair.
By the way, that's a fair question, and it is something we look at. We don't want teams to get too far or ahead or too far behind the pack in terms of games actually played. It's a competitive issue. My guess is, without knowing the specifics of the Rangers, but it is my guess, is it probably has something to do with building availability. It may be that Madison Square Garden has more availabilities early in the season than late in the season. Maybe it's a function of the Westminster Dog Show, the circus, or a bunch of other things that the Garden has commitments for that our scheduler has to anticipate when he does the schedule. In other words, If they're out of the building for two weeks in March for some reason, the Rangers, Madison Square Garden I'm referring to, then we've got to put the game somewhere else and put them on the road. And so my guess is it has something to do with building availability.
By the way, the Rangers are off for a week right now. Those games in hand are going to change. The Rangers will not have played more than most teams by the end of this week.
It balances off.
Sure
we don't just hand the club a schedule and say, here it is, too bad. The schedule probably goes through anywhere.
You're going to like it. Here it is.
Yeah, right. It'll only hurt for a minute. The schedule probably goes through between 80 and 90 drafts. And every team's general manager is consulted. There are always things in a schedule a club doesn't like, and there are always things that we try to accommodate a club with in terms of special dates or road trips or the like. And it's a closed system because for everything you do on the one hand to try and improve the schedule, it has an impact somewhere else because we're trying to schedule 1,230 games in 30 different buildings in the space of 184 days. And there aren't always building availabilities that make sense. And if we're going to send the Rangers to Los Angeles on a road trip, we got to make sure that they're getting to see the Ducks and the Sharks because we don't want to send them out there three different times. So, you know, with all of those factors in mind, and there are all sorts of preferences that the clubs have, days of the week they want to play, whether or not they want to play home tired, which is the second game of a back-to-back at home. I mean, the list of competitive issues that each general manager chooses to focus on is incredible. And, you know, all the teams like to play on the weekend. Nobody likes to play early in the week. And so, again, there are lots of reasons why this happens, but it balances out over the course of the season.
All right, at this point, we're going to welcome a gentleman to our show who is obviously a list maker because at one point in his life, he made a list of 101 things he wanted to do in his life, and the last time I checked, about 71 of them were already checked off. And, Gary, you know this gentleman well.
Ted Leonsis, chairman and majority owner of the Washington Capitals. Welcome.
Hi, Mr. Commissioner. Unfortunately, being interviewed by you on a radio show was not on the list.
You know, I was going to ask you about that. I went and looked at the list before I came down here. By the way, people should know that you have your own blog, Ted's Take. It is, you know, very well followed and viewed by lots of people. Part of it is your list of things you want to do in the course of your life. And, you know, it didn't hurt my feelings, but I think we can add it to the list and you can check it off and make it 102.
That's good. Well, it's very brave of you to be taking calls all the time and coming on the show. And how's it going? How's the show doing?
Actually, I'm supposed to be interviewing you, but
show's...
Hey, let me ask you a question. Tell people a little bit about yourselves, your background, and how it was you came to be a professional sports team owner.
Well, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and Lowell, Massachusetts, two working-class towns. And my father was a Greek immigrant, and he was a waiter. And from time to time, some of the people that he would wait on would give him their tickets to either Rangers or Bruins games, and occasionally a Knicks game or a Celtics game. And so I became a fan early on of indoor sports and really got to see the old Rangers with the gag line and moved to Massachusetts right during the heyday of the Bobby Orr era and Stanley Cup champ. And then after college, I went to Georgetown University. I got into the technology business and started my first company when I was 25 years old. Sold that, made a little bit of money, and then started a second company that merged with AOL and AOL went public. I became president, and the company grew and grew and grew, and I made some money. And all of a sudden, the sports teams became available in my hometown, and you just have to jump at that because it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And it was on my list of the 101 things to do.
That was the reason you had to do it then.
And all I could think of was, what if I get all 100 done and I don't buy a team and I don't win a championship? So that's the quest.
So speaking of winning a championship, the Caps started slow this year and have basically been red hot since you made a coaching change. From an owner's perspective, what's it like making the decision to change coaches in the middle of a season? What was the thought process you went through, and how excited are you now?
Well, I wish I could tell you, you know, why a coach will work and why a coach won't work. And truthfully, we had a wonderful gentleman as our coach, Glenn Hanlon. We got off to a 3-0 start, and then the wheels fell off very quickly. And we thought it was because of a lot of injuries that we had suffered. We were missing a lot of key players for a long time. And then I went away on vacation, Gary. I wish I could take either the credit for this, but I actually went on vacation over Thanksgiving, and I watched a couple of games from on television. And one game was a real stinker, and then the next game was really bad. And about midnight that night after the game, George McPhee, our general manager, called and said, I have to make a change. I don't know if the coach knows what to do now, what he's going to say to the team. They're not responding. And so we're going to bring our AHL coach from Hershey up, and we'll put him on an interim basis. I have a real good feeling about him, but I want to put an interim tag, and then we should discuss how we should go organize a real search. But I do think George, in his heart of hearts, knew this would work because he was real slow in finding candidates that we could go interview and organizing that process. And all of a sudden we woke up on this great run, and the guys really loved the coach, mostly because we have a young team, and he coached a lot of these young players to the Calder Cup Championship in the AHL. And he feels he knows them and he trusts them. And his style of play was attack and roll four lines, and it's okay to make errors of commission. And so he has just turned the young kids loose. And, you know, we played the Rangers the other day. We went into overtime 4-on-4, and our four guys on the ice were Backstrom and Semin and Green and Ovechkin, four players, all 23 or younger. Green ended up scoring the game winner. That was his 15th of the year. He leads all D-men in goals now at 23. He's like the senior citizen of the group. And I think last night in Atlanta, he had 33 minutes of ice time. And you know, Ovechkin's leading the league, I guess, still in goals and points.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we signed him to a nice long-term deal. I think Backstrom is either tied or 1 point behind the rookie point leader right now. And so we have young kids, and he believes in them and is playing them like crazy because we still have a bunch of injuries. And so the team is a very exciting team to watch, and we don't know what our upside is. We're tied for first in the division, but it's so close that if you lose two games, you could be next to last in the division.
Well, actually, I think you're at 60 points, Carolina's at 60 points, Atlanta's at 60 points,
right,
and Florida's at 58.
Yep.
How do you watch a game? I mean, can you sit down and relax and enjoy it, or are you just a crazy person?
If you want to see a crazy person, you should see George McPhee at a game. You know, it's so funny that his nickname is the Undertaker, because they think of him as being so low-key and in control. Well, you ought to see him if a team scores. I watched him. A team scored on a 5-on-3. We were on a 5-on-3, and they scored shorthanded. I literally thought that George was going to have a heart attack and jump out the window. And so, I'm very intense when, even in the box where we have friends or family, I tend to sit by myself and watch the game. It's still enjoyment for me, but there is a lot of work as I've gotten to know more about the game and the systems we try to play and what they're expecting from individual players. I can watch the game within the game, and you know, I'm a fan at heart. I'm a fan advocate, but I really do want to see this team improve to the point where we're a perennial playoff team. And, you know, my goal, sincerest goal, is to bring a Stanley Cup to the city.
A step you took, obviously, in planning that direction was signing Alexander Ovechkin. I think I read somewhere that he wanted a shorter deal and it was your idea to take it out 13 years. What was the thinking?
I thought you were going to get mad at me.
Well, Mom, we don't have to talk about that now. you don't know that I didn't.
The thinking was pretty simple. It was we had a really, really good team in Washington for a number of years. I think St. Louis and Washington had the most playoff appearances over a 20-year period. And your reward for being a good team but not a Stanley Cup winning team is to continuously pick in the middle of the draft. And we were always picking 15th and 16th, and with the lockout looming and our team getting older, we took big risk. And we traded away almost all of our star older players, many of who have now since retired or, you know, they certainly hit their peak years. And we loaded up on draft picks and prospects, and we were really a terrible team for that year, and we won the lottery. I mean, I'll never forget the day when I was working at AOL. I actually forgot it was the day of the lottery. And when you called to say, you know, I'm here with so-and-so from this accounting firm and you've won the lottery, I thought you were kidding.
Wait, you thought you won $1 million?
I thought you were kidding. I knew we'd get a high pick. And that pick ended up being Alexander Ovechkin.
It seems to me, and this is, you know, a fan perspective from afar, since you signed him to the contract and observing him All-Star weekend, he seems to have even more confidence and is more outgoing than he was, and he's always been an outgoing guy.
Yeah, he's a beautiful kid. He's an unbelievable player. And for him now, and what I liked most about everything that he said, and it was, I just want to make the team great. I don't have to worry at all about negotiating individual stats. I just want to be about the team. And, you know, he's playing at an MVP-like caliber pace of play. I mean, even last night, I thought we had dominated most of the game. We were down 2-1, and he got us a point. He scored a game-tying goal with about a minute and a half left in the game, and then we lost in the shootout. And, Gary, there are days that I really like to shoot out, like when we win.
I've heard that before. Yeah. Hey, let me talk to you for a second about the intersection of your business, being a pioneer with AOL and in the digital space, and sports. We get emails, I'm looking at one right now, from somebody who says, you've reacted to bloggers and credentialed them better than anybody else has done it in sports. Talk for a couple of minutes about where you think this is all going and why in this space, meaning sports and digital combined, and blogging in particular, this is where you see the future.
Sure. The NHL is blessed to have the most wired and most tech-savvy of all audiences, and they want their content and media the way they want it. At the same time, traditional media, especially print-based publications, are struggling, and they... Here in Washington, we have a single writer that covers us, and I decided that if we could activate a very active blogosphere, that they would be able to give us coverage, and they'd write good and bad, and we should embrace them. And, you know, if someone's going to blog and be high up on the algorithmic ratings, they have to do good work, and they have to point back and forth to one another. And we have a great group of bloggers, and they come out, they come to games, and, you know, it's really been helpful to us. It's upped our profile. You can see direct correlation between winning, between having more coverage and attendance, and, you know, the strength of your business. And so I just felt it was the right thing to do for our situation. But I also do believe that we, of all sports, who have, of the four major sports, seemingly struggle to get our fair share. Although when you look at some of the recent reports, and I'm sure you must have been smiling last week, you know, the game's now ranked as more popular than basketball. And so I
noticed.
So getting this young generation, this Facebook, MySpace, Web 2.0 generation more loyal to our sport, I think is magnanimous, but let's be honest, it's the right business decision, and so that's why I did it.
We're talking to Ted Leonsis, chairman and principal owner of the Washington Capitals. I was told I can ask you one more question, so let me let you plug something else that was on your 101 list of things to do. You wanted to make a film. You made one called Nanking, and I think you've dubbed the term philanthropy or filmlanthropy.
Filmanthropy. Yep, I've actually made two movies. Nanking, which is in movie theaters right now and will go on HBO in April. My second is Kicking It. Kicking It is a film about homelessness and the power of sports, and it premiered at Sundance last month, and ESPN bought it. We'll be showing it, and now I'm in close with ESPN. They want more sports movies, so I got to find a great hockey-themed film to bring to lots and lots of people. And the idea is to use the media, film, to create communities of interest, activate volunteerism, get people to donate around a cause, and to shine a light on a tough subject. With Nanking, it was this forgotten Holocaust in China. With Kicking It, it's the reasons for global homelessness, and frankly, how these people who you would cross the street if you saw walking down, you know, an abandoned street in Manhattan, these people, through the power of sports, reclaim their lives, and how how just teamwork and competitiveness bring out the best in people. And so I really enjoy it. I think it's another way of giving back. I think that's one of the great things for owners about sports, the kind of charitable work and giving that you can do with a sports team and the kinds of work and leverage that your players do. Just add to that giving back to the city because, you know, we live here, we play here, we get coverage here. Players like Alexander Ovechkin are growing up here. We want them to be, you know, real, concerned, giving back citizens. And we're blessed in the NHL in that our players are such good human beings and they really connect with the community. So I'm trying to set a good example. And it's really an honor to own a team and have a bunch of players that really want to give more than they take.
Ted, thank you for being with us, and I don't just mean today on this show. Good luck down the stretch run to the playoffs, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. Take care.
That was Ted Leonsis, chairman and principal owner of the Washington Capitals.
And I think the toughest, there are some items on his list that are going to be easier to achieve than others. The one that I think may be the toughest is item number 59, get a hole in one. Good luck. Ted, best of luck with that one. Hey, listen, callers, patience is a virtue. You're going to be rewarded when we come back. We'll get to the calls. This is the NHL Hour on NHL Home Ice, XM204 and NHL.com.
If 1 hour isn't enough, think of it as 3,600 seconds devoted to you. You're listening to NHL Hour on NHL Home Ice, XM 204.
And welcome back, everybody. Bill Clement with NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman, and the commish is pulling ahead of me in the Name That Tune category. And while we're checking the scores on that. A quick reminder that this Sunday you'll want to tune into the NHL on NBC. It's the Red Wings in Dallas taking on the Dallas Stars. It's 3:30 Eastern. That's game time. You can check your local listings for the station and time in your area. And we've got some callers that have been super patient, so let's fire away.
And we're grateful for that. George in Montreal, you're on XM 204 with Bill and Gary.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, and you're a staticky. Don't move.
I'm fine. Guys, I'll get right to the point. I'd like to go back to and refer to the Uri Fischer freak incident. To my knowledge, both Nashville and Detroit agreed that the game should be stopped. My question is why, when it was replayed, it started with a clean slate, but the score was 1-0 Nashville. I mean, I could understand if they started the second game with 8 minutes taken off the first period and the score 1-0, but a full 60 minutes on the clock, it doesn't make sense.
I think if my memory is not failing me, Nashville was up at the time we agreed to call off the game, and we thought, in fairness, the best thing to do was, instead of having the fans come back for a piece of a small game, you know, a miniaturized game, not having the players go through their regular routine, if we were going to stop the game and play it again, we wanted the players to have the regular game experience. We wanted the fans who had come out once and were coming back again to have a full game experience. But because Nashville had been up at the time, we thought, and the teams agreed, that this was the fairest way to do it.
I don't remember who won that game. Who won the rematch game? I don't even remember.
I don't remember who won the rematch game either. Maybe we'll have to check.
Our next caller will know.
Or we'll look it up online while we're on. Mark in Louisiana, you're on with Bill and Gary, XM 204.
Hey, Mr. Commissioner, how you doing?
We're good. How are you?
Great. Hey, now that the NHL is playing games outside the United States regular season, I think it would be a great idea if they did that inside the U.S., in markets that don't have NHL teams. Personally, I would love to see like a Dallas-Atlanta game played in New Orleans to try and build up the game down here. And on the same note, I'd also love to see some of these NHL teams who have relocated go back and play a game at their original site. Like, let the Coyotes play a game in Winnipeg and give those fans in Winnipeg a chance to see an NHL game in their own city again. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's an interesting point. If you go back, I think it was the late 80s or early 90s, we actually played neutral site games, and they worked well, but the interest for our teams in their home markets, we play at 92% capacity, is great, is strong, and has remained so. Playing in Europe is a little bit different because what we're doing there is bringing home, in many respects, a game that has 30% non-North American players, and people in Europe are following the game as well, and they have less access to our game and our players than fans in North America have based on our current footprint. I don't think there's been much call. This is the first suggestion I've heard in a long time about going back to North American neutral site games. It's obviously something we'll put on the list of things to think about as time goes on. Gus in Long Island. How can we help you? It's Chris. It's Bill and Gary on XM 204.
Have you been cheating on me? Who the heck is Chris?
He wants to talk about Chris Simon, so go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, one thing I want to comment also is on kudos to the Cats, man. I'm almost as big as an Ovechkin fan as I am an Islander fan. That kid's phenomenal. Yeah, it's great. I wish we could market the sport more around him. I know there's some legal matters with the Russian players coming over, with himself, Malkin, and Kovalchuk, but they are a phenomenal trio, the three of them. I'd say the two, either Ilya or Alexander the Great, either the best two in the league or at least one and three, you know, in the top three. But the reason why I'm calling is, you know, I'm a depressed Islander fan. I open up the Newsday local paper here, and I read the paper. Oh, Chris Simon's due to come back February 21st. My question is for you, Gary, is, under what circumstances is it going to take for this guy to be ejected out of the NHL completely? Not only did he have the Horwig incident and he stomped on this guy's ankle, he had about another 4 to 5 priors. I'm humiliated to see him in the Islander uniform. I was a season ticket holder. I pulled them when he committed the second infraction. I have a lot of friends that are thinking about boycotting the Islanders if he comes back. We really don't want to see him in the uniform. And how do you think the NHL can handle that? I mean, if you guys are willing to lose fans, and I've been a fan since I was born. You know, I went through the Stanley Cup years with the Islanders. and I'm humiliated. Now, not only was I humiliated with Peter Spano, which went on during the late 80s, early 90s with that guy, you know, saying he's owning the team and he's not, and then, you know, we all know what transpired with that. But now I have to have this Simon guy, which I gave him the benefit of the doubt with the whole league incident. And then again, this year, he does the same thing. Slew puts the guy, stomps him out. And that was a definite stomp. It wasn't a step on. He was stomping on him. And
that's a disgrace. And that's why he got a 30-game suspension. Chris Simon has been severely punished on more than one occasion. A 30-game suspension is basically a third of a season, a third of his salary. This costs him hundreds of thousands of dollars. Before we take away anybody's ability to earn a livelihood, particularly somebody who has reached the point in his life where he can be a professional athlete at the major league level, we have to be judicious. Discipline needs to be progressive. We think our punishments have been very severe, but I think it's fair to say that anybody who's been suspended severely multiple times runs out of runway at some point. We think to this point, Chris has been appropriately punished, has paid a big price, and we're hoping that he doesn't have any incidents in the future that would cause us to want to have to impose discipline again.
There's always the option of fans lobbying with the Islanders. I mean, at some point, it's fans, as this gentleman explained, not wanting to go and see the Islanders play. So could always lobby with the Islanders. Will we have an email, or are we going to go back to the
No, Pons? We're confirming the fact that the game that was stopped and then replayed with a one-goal lead was won by Nashville, 3-2, I believe it was. Keith in Peoria, you're on XM204 with Bill and Gary.
Gentlemen, thank you for having me on the show. First off, Mr. Commissioner, thanks for doing this. As far as I know, you're the only one of all the major sports that do this, and I think it's a great idea.
Thank you.
I just wanted to touch base and let you know that I'm one of those rare hockey fans that's actually quite happy with everything that you're doing. I think the rule changes have been great. I love the shootout. You guys are coming down, I think, just right on the infractions. And my biggest thing that I love right now is I just got a nice HD TV, 42-inch, and I love the fact that you guys have games on the HD Net channel. It's wonderful to see. It's almost like sitting there. So keep up the good work.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Is Ron your first cousin or your second cousin?
We're not related, but I hope it's not as rare as he just said. But that's nice to get feedback like that. Thank you very much. Ron in Texas, you're on with Bill and Gary, XM204.
Gentlemen, how are we today?
We're doing okay. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. As a lifelong Capitals fan, it's nice having meaningful games this late in the year after many down seasons. And it's nice to follow up Uncle Ted there. I'm still waiting for my invitation to sit in his owner's box for a game, but I guess I'll wait in line for that. Anyway,
send him an email. He might invite you.
Yeah, he does answer his emails. I can attest to that.
Yes, he does.
One thing I've noticed this season is, and in particular in the Verizon Center, is the horrible condition of the ice surface. And there's some of us Caps fans that even think it has actually cost us a game or two on our home ice and possibly have contributed to, in particular, Chris Clark's injury and possibly some others. And there's other arenas that are having the same issues. Is there anything being done or addressed from the league level about that? And I'll let you all answer that. But I want to also, like the previous caller, I want to say I like some of the rule changes you all have made with the touch-up offsides. But the shootout, I don't know. It's affecting playoff races. And is there any chance that's going to go away, or is that here to stay? And
well,
they
tell me I have 30 seconds to answer all the questions. And the answer is we take the ice conditions. They're very important to us. We have Dan Craig, who works for the league and helps supervise and monitor what goes on in the ice and makes improvements. But these are multi-use buildings. They have concerts. They have basketball games. And that impacts the ice. The shootout isn't going anywhere. Overwhelmingly, fans love it, and we're good. Bill, it's all yours.
Gary, we're going to give you the week off next week. Your deputy commissioner, Bill Daly, will be here to answer questions by phone and email. That's Thursday, 4 p.m. Eastern, the NHL Hour. Right now coming up, it's Phil Esposito and Jim Taddy. We'll see you next Thursday, 4 Eastern.